Good evening. Today is Monday, April 29th, 2024, and we're studying the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This week's chapter is We Agnostics, and our speaker tonight is Kendall. Thank you, Kendall.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Kendall, and I'm a recovering compulsive overeater. Glad to be here this evening. This meeting's really important part of my recovery. I haven't been here in a few months as some things have changed in my work and take up a lot of my evening time, but I was so glad to be able to give service today. I begin many of the times that I've had the opportunity to speak just with a reminder that this is a like a disclaimer that this is my experience with the text, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm going to do my best to speak about my own experience, strength, and hope that have been given to me through God, whom I call my higher power. I call my higher power God, the steps, and Overeaters Anonymous. So, just as a part of how the program works for any newcomers, really, really brief qualification, smash everything down into just about a few seconds or so, which is just I started eating and couldn't stop. There are certain items that once I ate them, it was off to the races. And for me, those are flour, sugar, and their substitutes, dairy, nuts, and I'm a volume eater. So I can take any food and make it a compulsive food. And it comes at the root of dishonesty and self-seeking. So I learned how to lie before I learned how to eat. And when I did all of those things together, they got me to 464 pounds. I was eating to die by the time the pandemic came, and I made my way into the rooms on my knees, November 11th in 2020, and I've been abstinent since September 4th of 2021. I was abstinent for about 10 months, almost 11 month stretch, and then reset my dates. September 4th, 2021. I've been abstinent since then, and just again for the newcomer, abstaining is refraining from the compulsive food or compulsive food behaviors. And so my highest weight that was recorded is 464 pounds. And I currently have a weight release of 160 pounds. I sponsor men in this program and I work with a sponsor to be in the connection to higher powers. This program really works. It's not me that works, it's the program and it's my higher power. And so with that, I want to kind of just get into talking about the text. In reading, We Agnostics. This text reminds me that well, also quick disclaimer, I tend to bounce all over the place, so I have some notes that I took based on the text. So if you have your book with you, I want to try to stay as close to the text as I can so that I don't want to editorialize. I want to talk about my experience, and it really comes from my experience of working the steps in fellowship with my sponsor and these things. I really want to stay connected to that. That's been important to my recovery. So just reading this text, it reminds me that I kind of see myself as an alcoholic with food. So I came to the realization that if I were to sum up all of this, I did not actually have a faith life before coming to work the 12 steps in recovery. And I'll kind of explain through that through the text. So I come from a background that was bifurcated with one side of my family was like with my dad, who was very involved in organized religion in the church. And a mother that's always been a spiritual seeker. So I went to lots of different religious groups. I saw lots of different things. I have many different religions and different practices and spiritual practices on my mother's side of the family. So I kind of grew up thinking I knew lots of stuff. I grew up reading lots of spiritual texts, lots of religious texts. And at my core, with the disease of compulsive overeating, has spiritual information went in for me. What it came up for me was I believed that if I just knew enough stuff about God, and that was how I was going to demonstrate that I believed in God, and that was what was going to give me power and influence in my life. I thought that the information that I was giving was not making me a vessel of peace or love or light or any of those things. I thought it was making me powerful. I thought it would make me a king. In some way, in my head, it was going to give me power over my circumstances in my life. And so I had to be really, so when I was learning things, I was learning to try to get to some source of some access to power to wield over other people, not power over my disease. Because, you know, everything that I knew and what I knew coming, so in that step one where I admit that I'm powerless over food and that my life's unmanageable, everything I knew did not stop me from eating. Every single time I prayed, asking to be relieved of gluttony in my life, the church-wide participating in fasts, like the social pressure at the meals where people would look at my plate and kind of, there was like a little like eye shaming and people just like, boy, you know, you better get right with God and, you know, your food, you're eating too much and all of those things that would happen in those religious spaces for me. I thought what my shortcoming or the word might be sin was actually of gluttony was actually my illness of compulsive overeating. And that's not to say that I am not a glutton. I really, as a compulsive overeater, but as an addict with food and as an alcoholic with food, I want more. It's a disease of more for me, which means I want more of everything, not just food, more knowledge, power, influence, money, validation, anything that could be collected and that I could use to wield to show that I was somebody. I always really identified with that line on page 2 in Bill's story, which is said, I'd prove to the world that I was important. I always had a chip on my shoulder, and I thought that if I had more stuff and more power, I was going to become a better person. I don't, you know, I'm really grateful that I made it into these rooms and to see a better path for my life, because I really was not headed anywhere good. And so there's some lines that I want to go right to in the text. So on page 44, there's that section that says, we hope we have made clear the distinction between alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. And so I start there because just to say that in some of the text before, in coming to, you know, in going through the step one experience, I had to understand that I wasn't a heavy drinker or a heavy eater. I could, there were no sufficient reasons that could get me to stop eating. I thought because 2 years before I came into program, I went into diabetic ketoacidosis. For anybody that's familiar with that, my blood sugar was over 400. My A1C was 12, and I was in the emergency room. They had to give me, I had IV drip that had to go to my arteries because my veins had collapsed. My body was leaching minerals. You know, I couldn't see very well. I was in rough shape. And then I still compulsively ate for another 2 years and manipulated insulin. After that, before I came to program. So I was really no sufficient information from a doctor, no pleading was going to get me to stop. There was not a reason to live for my wife or anything. It didn't matter. I was just still headed that way. And so I was an alcoholic. I'm not a non-alcoholic. I had to be sure of that because the next part of the text says, if when you honestly want to, you can't find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. I love that they still use a lot of this language. Like the next sentence, it says, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. It's still so gentle. It's very direct, but it's really gentle because it's not making a strong declaration. It's just relaying suggestions and the collective experience of the alcoholics. So, because as an addict, I do not respond to being told what to do very well. When people tell me what to do, even if I know it's for my own good, I will do the opposite. Most of my life is built with people with good intentions trying to guide me towards some sort of weight loss or a better way of life. But I had to go the other way. I'm a kind of person that has to crash the car myself. I'm a leader. I find that I have to have the dignity of choice. And if I don't have the dignity of choice, I'll take it. And I'll push myself away out of jobs. I'll push myself away from people, places, things, institutions, anything. And so it was, and through that, my experience is that it was people that were relaying their experience as a compulsive overeater and the strength of the program and their hope of their new life with a higher power that made me seek a spiritual experience for myself. So that sentence, this page is really important to me in my recovery. One line that I did want to reflect briefly on was on page between 44 and 45, it says, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. And another line there, which was, our human resources as marshaled by the will were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. I had to find a power which we could live, and it could be a power greater than ourselves. And my life is about finding and searching for that access to power. Thank you, Mary.
Pan.
Thank you, Marietta. I see the time. Appreciate it. Thank you for your service. So for me, in summation, right? So I had to acknowledge, really, when I'm reading this text, when I look at we agnostics, I had to acknowledge that I was an agnostic, because whatever God I knew and was communicating with was not helping me with the food or any of the bedevilments in my life, issues with money, with relationships. It wasn't working. So whatever I thought I knew, I still needed access to something that was greater than myself, greater than whatever knowledge that I was seeking. I was missing something. That intentionality, something had to change for me. And so, you know, that line, you know, here difficulty arises with agnostics. Many times we talk to a new person and watch his hopes rise as we discuss their alcoholic problems and explain our fellowship. So when people would talk about God to me, I would almost roll my eyes, because I said, oh man, great. This is a pay and way that has prayer. Because I tried all of the other things that had diets and all that stuff. I'm like, and also, you know, as being pretty arrogant, oh, I thought I knew everything I needed to know about God. I could go chapter and verse through so many books. I could show you where things were the same. They were different between different translations. And, you know, with all the head knowledge, it was a head full of words and a belly full of food. I could not connect the two things together. I would not bet on me if I was a horse, because I was not winning. I was not going to win that race. My life could not be run. I could not run my own life. I was done. It was really important that I was done. So in page 46, it talks about this line, we looked upon this world of warring individuals, warring theological systems, and inexplicable calamity. So there was this line, that line was really important to me, because I would look at religious folks, and, you know, I would get really skeptical, because, like, look at all these religions fighting. And for a long time in my life, I spent wandering away from a walk with a higher power, because I was like, well, what was the point? I came from a church where some things happened that I didn't think were very good, and problems with money and all of those things. And I was like, well, these people are just frauds. At my core, I really believed that what I had to do was say one thing and do something else, and that was the key to my spirituality. I had to pretend to be this virtuous person in public, and I could do whatever I wanted to do in private. And I found that that didn't line up, and I used to bristle at religious people, because, oh, well, you know, like, oh, you're saying all this stuff, but where's your heart? And I would say that stuff, and I wouldn't do anything different in my own life. But one of my favorite lines in this is, at much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. So a contact with God. And right here, that as soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, one of the things that's important in that line is all of the capitalized words that show higher power, different ways that I could use it, and different ways that I could reference higher power was important for me, because I needed to see a higher power that worked everywhere in my life. Because if it wasn't just the food, I needed to know that I was going into something that was way better than what I had come from. And for me, that was looking into the fellowship. And that really meant, so this line was, you know, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. So very simply, I found that the power, the access to power, and coming to believe in a power greater than myself was working the 12 steps, but particularly working in step 1 and step 2. So taking it as a very serious part of my work. And because it's a favorite part of my text, because religion or no religion, spirituality is the key. There's a phrase that very often I hear people say that, you know, that they're not religious, they're spiritual. And I found that for me, that that's good, because for me, spirituality means those are the things that I believe, or what I do is what I believe. What I do every day are the things that I believe. And in coming to believe, so on page 47, where it says, do I now believe or even willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself? I found that my experience was such that I was testing my higher power at all times. Thank you, Marietta. I found that, so working that step two, I had to test God. I was testing God. It's like, well, sure, if this is going to work, I want to eat so bad when I started in this program, this better work. I got to do this. You better show me. You know, for me, it was like, well, I think I'm headed towards death. This better work. God better be real right now. And what I found was every single time I reached out to another compulsive overeater when I wanted to eat, which again was me working my step one, admitting my powerlessness, I didn't eat. I bat 1,000 every single time I tell the truth. And I have no idea why that works. So I had to test it over and over and over again. I also found that I was slowly coming to believe in a power greater than myself at the same time. I had lots of really slow trust falls with God. It started with opening up more and more to fellows about what was really going on in my life. I started out when I was coming into program before my one, I hope my only relapse. I started out by telling everybody things were rainbows and sunshine and talking about all of the slogans about everything being great in my life and silently crying and, you know, gnashing my teeth and just white knuckling it, because I just couldn't, I didn't believe anybody that was actually happy in a meeting. I just thought that they were all full of crap and that it was all fake. And so that's how I worked my program. I would say all the slogans and then I would go home and I'd be upset. I would, you know, I'd get on the Zoom call and I would do that. But I found that as I was coming to believe in a God, that God, I had to believe not only was I pursuing a relationship with God, that God is pursuing a relationship with me, has been looking for me to listen for 37 years. So when I came into the program, 34 years, I believe in a God that's rooting for me. And I had to come to terms with that. I believe in a God that wants me to be sober, that wants me to live in the present moment and wants me to enjoy my life and to take in the flow of the universe with abundance and to help other people and to experience everything that the world has. And so that's going to have some ups and downs. So I have a God that's with me in everything. And I have to believe that so that I can work this program. It's the only way that I'll stay sober. I'm convinced of that. If I believe that my higher power can't handle 100% of everything that comes up for me, I'm out of here. I'm going to go to 500 plus pounds and I'm dead, because my disease, I know for sure, wants me alone and dead. There's no question. So I am headed towards certain unknown life in recovery or certain death. I'm headed towards the unknown and possibly a beautiful life, possibly anything, or I know what's coming around the corner. And so that line, oh, thank you, Mariette. I see that 2 minutes.
Okay, great.
Thank you. So on page 48, it says faced with alcoholic destruction. It doesn't say alcoholic problems. It says destruction. And it finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. The food had beaten me up so bad. I had no choice but to come into these rooms, because I had tried everything else. And so, and some people, it was a tedious process. It was tedious for me all the way outside of the room. For me, I had tried everything. I tried as much as I could. By the time I got into the rooms, my health was wrecked and I didn't have anything else to try. So this was it. This is the last house on the block for me. And so just the last thing I want to end with is the hope is just, you know, in some of those last parts of the stories in 49 through 51, where it's talking about like stuff like the prosaic steel girder and the advances of flight, what it really meant for me was that everything that I thought was never possible for me in recovery became possible. And my life became a testament to that, but also the lives of people around me, like my sponsor, were testaments to that. So I thought I could never stop and stay stopped in eating my alcoholic foods, but because I was drawn to them like a magnet, but I thought I was doomed to constantly repeat my defects of character that got me kicked out of jobs in my career. But that has vastly improved and has changed. I thought I was a person that was going to compulsively gossip for the rest of my life and talk about other people's business. But now my job is to be part of service. People actually trust me and will cry in front of me and will talk to me about their deepest problems. I don't have anything to do with that. That's all God. And my best thinking and managing, controlling nearly killed me. And so this program really works. And so I just wanted to say thank you for giving me the opportunity to share. And with that, I will pass. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Kendall. So excellent, as always. We will now open the meeting for questions or for 3-minute shares. As this is a big book study, sharing and questions should relate specifically to the chapter and step being studied this week. We ask you to accept this guideline in order to keep the meeting on track. If you'd like to share or ask a question, please raise your virtual hand, which is under reactions, or *9 if you're on the phone. I will call the raised hands in order, and the Zoom host will ask you to unmute when it's your turn. With the timekeeper, please set a timer for 3 minutes for each share and announce when time is up. If the speaker is asked a question, please allow 3 minutes for the answer. Where's all those hands, people? Thank you, Claudine.
I was trying not to be selfish and go first. I'm Claudine B., recovered compulsive eater in Nashville, Tennessee. Kendall, I'm always so excited when I see that you're leading. I always learn a lot from you, and I'm grateful for that. I love every time I hear you say I was eating to die, not because I love it, but because it's just such a perfect picture of what we do in this disease. It's such a good reminder that it really is that simple. That's what we're doing. And I wrote some other things down. There were no sufficient reasons that would keep me from compulsively overeating. And, you know, that just is basically when we just are crying, saying, I can't stop. I don't know why I can't stop. All this evidence is in front of me that my life is falling apart. I'm dying inside. I'm killing everyone around me, but I cannot stop. You know, and the other thing when you were talking about power and willpower and that kind of thing is eventually the pay and ways and all the diets and all the, they work till they don't. And then at some point you can't string an hour of abstinence together. It's just gone. It's, you know, the tires are stripped. You can't get any traction at all. And so I would bemoan I've lost my willpower. I've just got to get more willpower. And so I would think, you know, just this next thing coming around the bend, I'll have the willpower. And and what's funny to me is what I'm saying is I need power in my own will. If I can just make my will powerful, then I will lose the weight. I will stay on the diet. I will do these things. And knowing, you know, having grown up this way, knowing that it's God's will that I need to be seeking instead of my own, that my own will is empty. And then coming to find out that it's the exact opposite. I have to get rid of any power and lean on God's power and will in my life in order to heal. And I could not make that shift until I was in just a huge amount of trouble in every area of my life. Just, you know, I did not believe this disease wanted to kill me. I really didn't. I thought that was a lot of dramatics. I thought it was unnecessary. I thought all those things, but it really did. And it was heading that way. And it was the perfect storm, especially with the pandemic, because I was higher than I'd ever been. And I got scared. My daughter got scared. She was like, you know, she very kindly made a comment about it because she was scared about the combination of that. But anyway, all to say,
hi.
Very powerful share, and I'm grateful for you. Thank you. I'll pass.
Thank you, Claudine. Kelly, would you share with us, please?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Kelly, a compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. And Kendall, thank you so much. This is actually...
You're muted. You're muted, Kelly. Kelly.
Oh, now I got it. Okay. Sorry about that. It's just going on. Kelly, I'm a compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. And Kendall, this is the first time that I've been so lucky to have heard you and your share and your story. So very grateful I was able to get on this meeting this evening. A couple of things that stood out to me. One was, you know, this, you know, intellectualizing God, which, you know, I've never really thought of it that way. Like I've always you know, in the past, I think I had an intellectual approach to program and, you know, thought, you know, I could book smart it and that would, you know, that's what I needed to do and get better, like so many of us. But I never really thought about that intellectualizing God. And so I really liked the way that you put that. I think for me, not so much intellectualizing it, but I never really got it. Like I wanted to have this relationship, but I just never could, figure out, how to actually do that. And I think a lot of it actually, you know, had to do with some of my, my defects of character, were blocking me. And so that was the next thing that I really liked what you talked about was about how your defects improved in your life. So I was hoping maybe you could share just a little bit more about that, about how they've improved in your life, but also how you think you got there. I know you say, you know, it's all God, but was there, what kind of footwork on your part did you have as well? So maybe if you could just share a little bit more on that, I would appreciate it.
Thank you, Kelly. Can you?
Yeah. Sure. Thanks, Kelly, for the question. So to take on the first part, in terms of the character defects, one of the big ones was for me is gossip was really huge for me, character assassination. I talked a lot about people and because it came out of a lot of judgment and jealousy. And so the practical ways to work on that were to keep my eyes on my plate was first. So really being honest about what was going on my plate and not being in those decisions by myself. So having a nutritionist and my sponsor were direct helps in that. And so that I knew that no matter what anybody else was doing, I had something that was measured, weighed and measured in front of me. And I also had ways to weigh and measure my program. My sponsor had suggestions for me of, okay, how many meetings to go to per week. We had step work and those specific things. And I found that the more, actually a fellow, I was in a big book study the other day, and a fellow just said this phrase about just like, you know, how do I get curious about what God has for me? And I realized like, how do I get curious about that? And so what is that meant for me at the time, particularly in early abstinence, was getting just obsessed with just suffocating any extra time, spending it on my program. And so that was reading, going to more meetings, more outreach calls, whatever my sponsor asked me to do, doing that and probably a little bit more because I had a lot of food thoughts. I was thinking about food 24/7, 365. And I was also obsessed with what other people thought about me 24/7, 365. And so I found that the more actions I was taking to be of service, the more actions that I was taking, even if I didn't think it was going to work, it was working anyway. I can remember just like it was yesterday that some a guy that has about 25 plus years of abstinence, I was calling him, and I was about 60 or 70 days abstinent at first. And I was just complaining about literally everything in my day. And he just interjected, you know, he said, "Kendall, when was the last time you thought about eating?" And I just could have been, I could have just cried right then. I didn't cry, but I really didn't realize that I had not thought about food. All I was thinking about was all these other things in my life, but the compulsion to eat was gone for like 5 seconds. The first time I did not think about eating. And so I was like, that was proof for me. And that humbled me because I was taking actions that I was convinced weren't going to work. So humility came into my life simply by just doing what was in front of me. It took away the time to judge other people. So I think that's one of the biggest ways that my character defects got worked on at first. And then, of course, working through step three, but particularly in step four, doing the inventory and seeing some of the ugly, but also some of my patterns, that helped with the character defects too. But I hope that answers your question. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Kendall. And Elle, would you share with us, please?
Hi, my name is Anne. I am a compulsive overeater. When I came to this program, I was pretty broken and had no idea who I was or what I was doing here, but I knew that I needed help. And I really had to just totally start over. I had never really looked very intensely at myself. I'd always focused on everything else out there, and including the food too. And I had to change everything basically. I had awful relationships. Everything that everybody else always has. And the first time I heard somebody say it's not about the food, I was like amazed. I didn't understand that. I couldn't believe it was not about the food. But once I got to that place and I became abstinent and had a little bit under my belt with abstinence, a few months, I could understand what people had said about it's not about the food. And I started to understand about working the steps and putting time in. It took me probably about 2 months before I started following suggestions that my sponsor gave me and started attending more meetings and doing calling people and doing all those things that she had said early on to do. I was skepticism. I was born with it. I carried it with me into this program, and I was a skeptic, and I didn't want to believe that any of it was going to work. But, it took me trying those things and making the movements towards what she'd always said to me to do. And once I started to do them, the miracles started slowly, and they just kept coming, and they kept coming, and they kept coming. And that for me became my part of my recovery journey, and starting to heal myself from where I had damaged myself so badly with my diabetes and everything else, because I continued to eat after I became diabetic for quite a number of years. So, today I treat my body with the utmost importance. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. We will now stop the recording for unrecorded questions or shares. Would you stop the recording, Lee?